Hey, this is Michael Sedini from Walk the Talk America.
Hey, guys, this is Julie Golub with Team Smith & Wesson, and you're listening to the Armed Citizen Podcast.
From the Ghost Tactical Production Studio, welcome to the Armed Citizen Podcast. And now your host, Trey Miller.
Welcome to the Armed Citizen Podcast. I am your host, Trey Miller with Ghost Tactical Productions. And today we've got an awesome guest. She is a firearms instructor. She is a 2A activist. She is a media influencer. She wears about 11,000 different hats and she wears them all well. But we're proud to have Kellyanne with Armed and Feminine. How are you doing?
I'm just great. Thanks, Trey.
Thanks for coming on. And you guys have been busy. You were up at the state capitol not too long ago doing some stuff for the activism. You were on the road this past weekend doing a match with your DC program. You kind of are everywhere and anywhere. And tell me how that schedule, I mean, is this something that your schedule's always tight or do you have to plan stuff out way in advance or what's that like all?
My schedule is always tight because of these 11,000 hats that you mentioned, in addition to family, you know, obligations. I started with the DC project a few years ago, and that just sort of turned into its own animal. And people have been calling me and said, hey, we're having a rally or, you know, a little protest. Do you want to come? And of course, I said, yes. So I would change my schedule to accommodate that. That's sort of been my newest role is, you know, speaker at rallies, simply because I think I don't meet the usual role of crazy gun person that the Annies like to see, you know, not tooting a horn, but I'm pretty well educated. I'm very experienced. I'm okay in front of a crowd and I don't meet that profile. So it's always good to have a woman that's perfect, who understands the environment and can actually deliver, you know, some substantial material for people to hear. So I did the Pittsburgh gun rally. That was a big one because huge, infraction of preemption law, and Pittsburgh ended up passing this stupid law anyway, which is now going to hang up in court. So we started there in January, very cold, and then moved to Harrisburg to the Capitol for the annual rally for our rights there. And that was really well attended. We had over 200 people at that one. And then we'll be headed to D.C. in July to meet with all of our representatives and senators there. So, you know, it needs to just be a constant battle. You know, I said to a lot of my teammates, you know, the Moms Demand Action people are there all the time, every week. Now, they're paid to do that. We're not. But they're in the faces of our representatives constantly, and we're not. And I've always said that gun owners are always a silent majority. We've always felt like we've been untouchable because of the Second Amendment, but there's some real force that's coming our way. So we really need to be more vocal and visit, you know, those people who are going to be influencing gun control, if you will, activities. So we're just trying to gain interest, gain momentum, get more people involved, all to protect our 2A rights.
And I know that we've all talked about the NRA, whether anyone out there is supporters or not supporters of the NRA. I think we all can accept and at least acknowledge that a strong NRA is important to the Second Amendment. So let me ask you this, from your perspective, with all that's going on with Wayne LaPierre and the upper management of the NRA, from the perception of weakness of the NRA, is a 2020 election possibly at play it now? Because we know that the anti-gun side could possibly say that they took down the NRA and use this as a media propaganda. Do you think this is something that we need to be worried about?
I do. And, you know, I've also had echoed, united we stand, divided we fall. And I've mentioned to some people in my inner circle, you know, some who are sort of leaning away from the NRA. And, you know, I'm with Gun Owners of America, too, and the Second Amendment Foundation. Like, we have to be all part of all of that. But if you set it all the way back to 1968, like, none of us would really be where we are or what we're doing. You wouldn't be doing what you are. I wouldn't be doing what I am if it originally wasn't from the NRA. You know, I'm an endowment member of the NRA. I think that we can't turn our backs on it. Yes, I think it does need some restructuring, and there needs to be some accountability of it, for sure. But we still have to support the original reasons for it. And, you know, people don't understand the two sides of NRA too. And I brought this up in many forums that one side's all about education, which is great. The NRA Foundation makes grant money available for youth programs, women's programs, for the betterment of clubs and all kinds of free money. And we don't see that. We've got really good training programs. And then there's the ILA, which is the political piece, which is what everybody is sort of starting to turn on. So we can't really give up on what any of that is, because they really are the main voice of really keeping our RTA rights strong. So I'm glad that there's Gun Owners of America. I'm glad for the Second Amendment Foundation. You know, we, like I said, needs all of us to be doing this. And I think the left will really take advantage. And I can't even say that maybe they're not causing some of this, you know. I think that they kind of are, but I don't know that for sure. Anything to stir it up to better themselves in the next election. Can you grab her?
Yeah, we had a nice little chat a couple of weeks ago. Some of us were getting on a live show and we're talking about the 2020 election. And you're so right. You know, when people were coming in the live chat, they have been for 6 months. Although, you know, the NRA needs to burn. And I say, well, first of all, what you don't like about the NRA is not what the vast majority of us respect about the NRA. You're right, just liking the ILA arm of this, the education, right, the training, the youth development, all of right, that is right, what the NRA for the longest time was based off. Mm-hmm. And then they decide, hey, we've got some power. We've got some say so. And no one else was kind of taking the torch as being the two way strong arm. Mm-hmm. They took that torch and ran with it. Now, like you said, they might have maybe gone a little too far. They might have some issues, but the gun community, as much as I love GOA, as much as I love the Second Amendment Foundation, and as much as I love the FEC, probably together they can't do what the NRA is infrastructure-wise is able to do. So we do not need the NRA to burn, but I wish people to understand that, you know, just because you don't like a couple people maybe in the upper management doesn't mean that we can afford for this organization to burn.
I totally agree with you. You know, I've met Wayne LaPierre on a few occasions, and not that we talk business for anything like that, but I've always found him to be compassionate. He listens very well. He seems very true to, you know, whatever we have to say. But there should be a little more accountability. I would have to agree with that. You know, a friend of mine said, who's been a true blue NRA guy, he's an older fella from our club. And he's like, you know, so these things all start as a movement and then they become a business and then it becomes a racket. And coming from him, you know, made me take pause because I thought, is this sort of what it's doing? Like, we need to get back to between that movement business piece to NRA and finding that respect so that, you know, all of the members. And, you know, here's the other piece that sort of bugs me about gun ownership. You know, the NRA only has about 5 or 6 million members to it. And how many people own guns? 300 million? You know, so I always look at it, I hate to say it, but I look at it as gun rights welfare kind of thing, is that, you know, we all pay our dues to help fight and continue to fight for hundreds of thousands of other people who own guns that don't support any of it financially. You know, everybody wants all of the benefits at the end, you know, contributing at the beginning. So,
I've got a couple of good dear friends of mine in this world that are both board members of the NRA. And I try not to, when I talk to them, I try not to talk business because there's not a whole lot they can do to talk about anyways. You know, not saying they'd want to, but it's you really want to let everything out. And I don't ask those questions. But I think the consensus from the board members that I have talked to is, I think everyone recognizes there needs to be change. I think everyone recognizes there needs to be something done, but the quagmire is what?
Yeah. Well, creating the awareness is going to help. I think there are a lot of really good people on the board too. Have some personal friends who are on the NRA board. I don't think anybody wants to ruffle feathers, but I think they all agree that something will be done. And I just have a feeling that it will come. Like I said, the accountability measures. And look, if you look at any company, even ones that we invest in as, you know, personal investors, you elect members a board of directors to make good decisions on your behalf. They don't want to come in. Well, they'll sometimes let you be at the meetings if you want, but they are not asking your members, how should we vote on this? Should we invest in this? Should we? No, you elect the directors to act in the best interest that they believe of the organization and its members at tow. So it's just like any other business.
For those that aren't really familiar with how you kind of got where you are, how did you, or was it more of like a competitive shooter? Was it an instructor? Did the activism start first? Or what's the evolution of Armed and Feminine?
Well, it started with my friend, the sheriff of our local county. I have been a huge advocate of community service in where I live. And some of those things, mostly from a disaster and health perspective, emergency services. So I've been out, you know, at night, 24 hours a day working these projects. And the sheriff said, no, you're all out doing all these crazy things. You need to get a gun. Come up and see me and get your permit. And honestly, I had never thought about it before. You know, I didn't think about guns one way or another. I didn't hate them. I didn't like them. So I went and I saw them and I got a permit and I really didn't do anything with it for the longest time. Then I mentioned it to some friends of mine. They're like, well, let us take you out shooting. We have lots of things you can try. And so I did, and, you know, love at first shot. Love at first shot. I've always been an athlete my entire life. So then I started to actually take classes. I'm like, I need some formal training. And needless to say, I was a little disappointed in like my first class that was co-ed, and you know, the men didn't really receive the women well enough, in my humble opinion, when they had questions, you know. So it was really intimidating for women to brand new to be in a room full of men and have a lot of questions. So I thought, you know what, this needs to be done the right way. I've always been a mentor of women. And I said, I'm just going to do this. So I discussed with my husband. He's like, yeah, go ahead. So I flew off to Phoenix and I trained a well-armed woman and spent 5 days in the desert. Great time. And I got a few certifications there. And I came back and just said, I love this. This is like the greatest thing that ever happened. I'm going to share this with other women. And I started it up. And the newspaper caught wind of it because women started posting their pictures of guns. And then, boom, it just sort of took off. And I think later in that first year, my husband said, hey, let's start a YouTube channel. I'm like, well, I don't really know much about that. And I was still working full time at the time. I'm like, well, I don't know. What are you supposed to do? So I just sort of started it as a reference library for my students because there's so much information for them to remember. I thought, if you forget a good grip, go and watch it. If you forget about your control, go and watch it. And that's sort of how it started. And it just sort of took on its, you know, own personality from there. And then at some point, Hiccup picked up a video of mine. I was like, now I know about YouTube because that big guy liked what I did. And he gave me a couple of shout outs. And actually, I've met him several times. He's really nice. He's like, stuck with it. It'll go.
He's just grandpa to me. He's a really cool guy, you know.
He is the sweetest man, and he had the nicest words for me to stick to. And he told me his story about being a teacher, and was so close to retirement, and he had to decide YouTube or 1 year retirement, and he gave up retirement. And I'm still waiting for that moment. So so we did. We stuck to it, and you know, I don't always have the time to really dedicate, but I would like to, you know, as frequently as everybody else does, but just simply because, you know, life happens and then I work and then I work and then work some more and take care of this and all these businesses and people. So I do the best that I can. I have a lot of routine kind of people who like what I put out. I try to keep it on the educational perspective. You know, I do a few gun reviews, but you could log on and there'll be 17,000 reviews. Like, I don't want to be in that mess. Well, my shtick is what I do well is teach. And so that's, you know, and a few silly ones here and there. And some of them are never planned and we're on the range and say, hey, let's just shoot this. So having fun. So a few years ago, Pennsylvania needed a representative for the DC project. That's how this started. And Carrie Lightfoot, who's on the NRA board and owns One Woman, said, hey, why don't you ask Kelly, she'll probably do it. Let's ask Mikey. So Mikey said, all right, I know a few people who do this, let's do it. So I didn't know what to expect. And So what the DC project is, it was started up by Dana Muller, the pro tree gunner and world champion shotgun gal. She's super awesome. And we have one or two women from each state descend in Washington to meet with all of our senators and representatives about issues that are important to us as female gun owners. So we put different face on gun ownership, again, because we don't meet that profile. So we break into teams and go meet with them and explain. Some have stories to tell, you know, why this is important, why we don't need gun control, why we need the freedom. And it tends to work. So this is my fourth year for DC Project, and National Shooting Sports Foundation always supports us while we're there. We're getting more support from, like I said, the match was supported by Hyperfire, Magpul, STI, Quarter Circle 10. Like, some really good sponsors have been coming in because they're appreciating what we're doing. And, you know, like I said, it's, you know, 3%ers once again who are doing all of these things. So we try to make a difference. We start with building relationships and just year to year, keep building the relationships, hoping that they'll come to us and ask questions. And that's another piece, is we will educate you. Don't say clip, don't say bullet, don't say, you know, fully semi-automatic, don't use the wrong terminology, because you're going to look stupid. So ask us first how this might impact everything overall. I know I have a representative here that will ask me all the time, what do you think about this? And I'll say, well, still an infringement, you know, it's discriminatory against the poor, like, whatever, things that they don't think about because they're not really in the gun industry. So I found it to be incredibly rewarding. It's incredibly exhausting, but it's all worth it.
Absolutely. And you talk about being a mentor and a teacher and a developer of women in the firearms. I love the fact that you were not a lifelong firearm enthusiast. It was one of those things that, you know, you weren't against it, but you were not in the culture or the community. And I tell people all the time, I think for anyone that's, you know, the 10% diehard gunners and the 10% anti-gunners, those minds are never going to get changed. But there's 80% of Americans that are at least open to a discussion. And we need to attack that. And I tell people the biggest way that I believe is getting them to the range. Because we all remember the first time we pull a trigger and that adrenaline rush and that exhilaration of, oh, yeah, I'm into this. If we can get more people to the range, I think we can change a lot of people's minds.
You know, at the end of the DC Project Week each year, we offer legislative aides of our senators and representatives and they themselves to come out to the range with us. That exact same thing. And, you know, only a handful ever take us up on it. Like, I volunteer every year to be an instructor for pistol, to go out there and do that. And I've been relieved each year because the numbers just weren't there. And that really breaks my heart. And sometimes it's a scheduling issue. So we're trying to do it a little bit differently this year to try to get more out. But you're absolutely right. And it doesn't really necessarily start at the top. That's not where we make our movement. We need to be grassroots, like with all of the women and all of the people in our community, and let that grow. You know, I only started this in 2015 and really part time. And we're almost 800 students already, just a couple of classes a month. We've had waiting lists. And so then they tell two friends, it's like shampoo commercial, and they tell two friends and so on and so on. And that's the way we do it. You're right. We get those mid people, bring them out, let them post their pictures everywhere of what a great time they're having, and I hire a photographer who comes out every single class. Bingo. And I tell people that all the time. Picture sell. Think about this crazy world we live in. Instagram, really? Picture. This is what we've become. And so I've had a photographer come from the beginning, and I send them out, and I say, please share them with all of your friends everywhere. And then people say, I want to do it. That looks like fun. I want to do it. And that's how we just continue that grassroots movement, is by touching the next neighbor. We're not going to get here and we're not going to get there. So everyone took someone to the range would be in great shape.
Well, and we also can recognize, I think all of us that actually take time to notice what's happening within our culture and our community, understand that there is a huge demographic that is misrepresented, unrepresented in the community, and that is the women. And I think a lot of it's been a selfish thing. I think that most men need to understand, if your wife or significant other wants to go to the range, what does that mean? you get to go to the range. So let's play a game here. I think that not having the representation is really hurting our community because our demographics to the outside don't look good. We look like a non-inclusive group, which is, I think, is very wrong, but that is the perception. So I want to ask you this. From your perspective, I love on your website, you make a comment on there that say most women love to being taught by women. Is that really what it comes down to, is trying to get more female instructors, or what's that next move to get more women involved?
Well, that does really help. And I will tell you that, you know, I grew up with all boys, so I didn't mind going to that first class where there were men, I could hold my own. But when I survey, you know, 750 women, the kids don't count in that. They will tell me that I love that it was just women. Or I'll say, how did you find me? And they'll say, I just Googled women's gun classes. And not necessarily that it's a male instructor, but they just wanted an all women class. So, you know, if you just did 10 women with you as a male as an instructor, I think it would work as well. But we are seeing more instructors come out, which women, which is great. I think National Shooting Sports said there are 15 million women now who own guns. You know, instructors, we're putting out more women, and I don't see it as a competition at all, because we're all in the same race. You know, we're all trying to do the same movement, but we do need to do that. You know, when you take a look at why do people do something, or if you tell them something, it's about why they should do it. It's not about this is what we do and this is great because. No, tell us why. Why? You know, and I hate to hit the security points, but, you know, a lot of women and the many who come out for me, believe it or not, my average age of student is between like 52 and 65 years old.
Really?
Wow. Very much. I didn't think that was going to be the case when it started. But the mature woman, they're empty nested, their husbands travel, they're widowed, something like that. So yeah, they're afraid. And I hate to admit this too, but the drug scene that is so bad, there are so many break-ins that they are really worried. That's the bigger piece. And so they need to become their own protectors. So if we look at this from an empowering standpoint of why you do this and help them with the journey. Because I have people who started with me at the very beginning who still call and ask me questions. They still want to come out and train. That's great. You can't just teach them and then let them go. Like, you have to maintain. Women like that. They like to maintain the relationship, to know that they can call you at any time. They can email you with anything. And it's fantastic. You know, which is so funny, either through my Facebook page or YouTube, I have women who will contact me that I've never met, but they follow me somewhere or another and ask me questions. You know, women are insecure to start with, whatever, because there's Cosmopolitan magazine, you know, which ruins everybody for life, ruins everyone. And they'll ask me these very personal questions, like, case in point, I had a lady said, listen, I'm going to cut to the chase. I'm fat. You need to help me find a holster. I'm like, okay, great. She would not come over and say, hey, Trey, I'm fat. Help me find a holster. But because I'm a woman, I'm just like the lady next door. There's some element of trust, and they believe that. So I think if we just promote it from a security standpoint, why you need to take this journey, that will build a whole lot more.
The security and all of that is something that is real. And so when you said that it's 52 to 65, that kind of freaked me out, because I was expecting the younger, just out of college, you know, would be the ones that are on their own for the first time. That was kind of interesting. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Now the younger ones don't seem to care yet. They're still invincible at that age. And then the next biggest demographic would be the mama bears, like the early 30s who have children, and they're like, I want to protect my children. So after the mature women, then we have the mama bears, and then but not nearly the volume in the younger crowd as I thought it was going to be at all. I just don't recognize that they need that yet.
And that's a fair point, because I think most of them are getting out of college. They've, and I don't want to put down our education, our secondary education system, but a lot of them are not being taught certain things in college. Like you said, they are bulletproof. So it may take them a reality check of a couple years before they really realize what's going on.
Yeah, we don't disagree on that point.
Right. Like I said, you wear so many different hats and you're involved with so many things. Is there anything new, or do you have any projects that you feel coming down the line that you are excited to maybe to talk about?
Yeah, well, this is my busy season because my range is outside. So, you know, we start our season the end of March, and we try to take it into October, depending on weather and daylight, of course. And so we're usually in the snow and cold for the first two classes, but people suck it up. So I have a ton of training. Classes are a little slow this time, but private trainings are way up. I'm not sure why, but that's pretty cool. So I'm just packed solid between travels and the travel and instruction right now, and taking care of my family and all of their business. So that's enough.
Yeah. And it's one of those things because it gets almost to the point to where you start doing the, you know, I train a ton. I'll go all over the country training, and I actually love the training aspect. I love learning, and it might not be firearms. It might be medical, you know, tourniquet. Mm-hmm. All sure. sorts of different training, which I love. You get into that, and then you have, you know, your other businesses, and then you have this, that, and the other. Next thing, I still work full time. It's just like people say, well, I wish, you know, can you do this or can you get involved in this? Man, I literally get 4 hours sleep a night. I don't have another hour a day to help. So I know that it gets busy, and I'm glad that you are able to do all that you can, because people don't understand sometimes the time, you know, that it takes everything we do, and especially you with doing all these classes, it's a nightmare.
Yeah, I have learned that it's liberating, and it's taken me way too many decades to say it is, I can't, or I'm sorry, or I'm sure someone else is better suited for this job, because I always said, yes, ask Kelly, she'll do it. Yeah, sure, ask Kelly, she'll do it. And so I did, and of course, I always want to do the best job. So like you, just sort of work yourself to death to do the best job. But sometimes being able to do the best job means reining back. You know, we can't do the best jobs that we possibly can if we're doing too many things at one time. I always tell everybody, you know, women love to say, oh, we can multitask. And when I learned all about front sight focus, told me that you can't multitask. You know, that brain can't focus on more than that front sight. So it really hit home. And I tell it to the ladies when they come to class, you can't really multitask a whole bunch of things because it's all about front sight focus. So I've learned when to say, you know.
Especially in this business when, you know, you're talking with media and you are a media influencer and this, that, and the other. You've, like you said, you've got business, family. Mm-hmm. There's only so many hours in a day. So I asked some questions to everybody, and I hope that you don't mind, but there's some interesting questions I think people like to kind of get to know people better. And the first question I want to say, ammo costs and legalities, you know, don't worry about ammo costs and all that. If you have one gun that you currently own, what would be your favorite gun to shoot?
Well, when I train, I usually use the Glock 19. My husband has the Gen 5, which I shoot the best. I absolutely love it. He doesn't let me carry it. I can't carry it, though. It's a little too big and bulky for me, but that's actually the one I manipulate the best. I did, speaking of training, you know, I do spend time as well training. And so I did a Glock operators course last year, and I used to carry the SIG prior to that, but you had to take a Glock to Glock school. Well, I cannot believe it. I don't have to, but you might want to. You know, if I had the money and money was never an issue, like I was just at the DC project match, and my job the second day on my stage was clearing all of the pistols. Well, so I got to handle 200 different pistols, and you know, most of them had the STIs, a different version or another, and I'm just like drooling and salivating over these beautiful pistols. I remember shooting them at SHOT Show too, and I said to the guy, I will work for you all weekend if you can give me one of these guns. So boy, I would truly love to have an STI. If they're out there listening, I would love to have one.
Send Kelly in a gun. Come on, guys.
That's the DBC. It'll be fine. The lower model. I'm good with it.
So you kind of said as far as pistol, what you would kind of drool over, but legality, money's not an issue. Not just pistols, but anything. What would be the dream firearm?
I don't know. You know, I just got an AR from LWRC. And it's beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful. It shoots like a dream. It's easier to clean. And I haven't really played with it enough. I think I got it maybe 4 months ago. I've shot it twice. And so I need to get better with it. And I will say I need to practice and get better with all of my long guns, because I've not been a every variety kind of gun gal. It's the long guns have been more tinkering with me. And I did buy a Benelli. I used Benelli, a shotgun. I like that, a semi-automatic. And Mossberg just sent for me the same shotgun that Jerry Michalik uses, a JM930. So I haven't even broken it out of the safe yet. We're having a defensive shotgun course. My friend Lori's coming in to head that up next weekend. So we have a full class of women for defensive shotgun, and we always do intro to AR when she's here. This is our third year, both very popular. So we will be breaking that in.
I did have a question from one of my patrons that sent in, and he's trying to get his wife more. She shoots, but he's trying to get her in concealed carry. Mm-hmm. Is there something that you can give to women in general? Maybe just a general, what's the one concealed carry tip that you give to women?
Don't carry it in a purse. You know, I'm all about on body, and women aren't comfortable with that. They just think they're going to get a gun and put it in their purse. And it can be dangerous to do that. No matter what system you're going to use as a holstering system, make sure you train. Training is very important for concealed carry. You can't carry it around. So that's my biggest tip, is no matter what your holstering system is going to be, you must practice that. And the other thing that I find with a lot of women, they'll come out for these beginner courses, and I might get them back out for a home defense course, or I might get them back out for concealed carry. But most often I don't. Like, I don't usually see them again. And that worries me, because taking one class or going back out to the range one time, you know, shooting is a perishable skill. You need to continue to maintain those. First thing they're going to forget is their grip, and they're going to cross or cup and saucer that thing. But they really need to practice with whatever system they're going to use.
People forget that part of concealed carry is, if you're going to carry on your person, that you got to practice the draw. Practice a draw from concealment, you know, and I love the ones that are going to carry a little Ruger LCP. They'll go to the range with a Glock 19. I'm like, why? You know, if you're going to carry the LCP, then train with the LCP, you know, and it cracks me up sometimes. But
you know what that stands for, right?
What's LCP? That?
Little crappy pistol.
it is, but it's also, if I want to tell someone to, what's a great $200 gun? I mean, you know, LCP is probably going to be up there. Now, mm-hmm. I recommend that. No, but I'd rather them carry an LCP than not carry. So.
I've seen it fail a lot, and I haven't seen any fail as much as I've seen the bodyguard fail in front of me. I actually had a woman who came out. She said, we were talking about how you choose a gun and your budget. And I'm like, how do you put a price on your life? You know, she told me that she spends like $8 a day at Starbucks. I'm like, really? I said, like, in 2 months, you could have a beautiful gun. That $8 you spend at Starbucks every single day. See, people don't really put it into perspective when they go and they see, wow, that gun's $425. Think about how you waste $425 over a couple of months, you know, drive through something stupid that's on sale that you don't need, tickets to a show, whatever, like forego the concert tickets that are like $200 a piece and get something that's going to protect your life. And if you maintain it and are good to it, you'll have it forever. And so I think people just don't put that into the right perspective of, you can't put a price tag on your life.
You can't. And there's two avenues, and we've had this discussion on, I was on someone's show not too long ago having this exact discussion. If you've got $300 to spend on a concealed carry gun, what do you get? And half the panel was, hey, you can get a nice M&P shield. That's, you know, which is great. I mean, M&P shields, you know, I don't carry it right now, but I carried it for years, and it very well could be the greatest concealed carry gun ever because of the size and everything else. But I said, yeah, you can do absolutely. Not a problem with the shield. Great gun. Or you can save for another extra month, like you said, a month and a half or 2 months, and now you got a Glock, or you've got a SIG, or you've got a Walther, or something in that $500 to $600 range that you don't have to worry about And so,
yeah, well, the other thing that I don't think people should discount are used guns. You know, most gun shops have a lot of used guns, and many of them make their way there just because people need money. That's how I got this beautiful Benelli shotgun, like, which you don't see over here in redneck land. I'm like, oh my gosh, how did you get this, Nick? And he's like, dude, just needed money. So I took it. I'm like, what? And so there's not that it's necessarily anything mechanically wrong with these guns. It's just that people either want to trade up or they need money. They sell them back. And so used guns can really be a good value on the upper scale of those particular models you mentioned.
Yeah. And I'll even go a step further in saying the police trade-ins. You can go get some nice Glock 17s and Glock 19s for a steal in these police trade-ins. And no offense to, I have one of my best friends, the sheriff here. No offense to law enforcement, but we know those guns don't get used as much as people think. So these trade-ins are phenomenal deals sometimes.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah.
So let me ask you this, and I ask all of my guests on the podcast, since it's called the Armed Citizen Podcast, what do the words armed citizen mean to you?
Oh, it means freedom. Freedom in every way, shape, and form. And, you know, that's the basis of everything that we're doing. Armed citizens, I mean, you can be armed with knowledge. You can be armed with, you know, weapons of every kind, and hopefully weapons and knowledge together make us a great armed citizenry. So that's what it means to me. Freedom. Fantastic.
So I know that you, like you said, you've got a lot of hats, you've got a lot of things, coals in the fire. For those that are looking to maybe get in a class or introduce themselves to you, get to know you, utilize this power of media and get a hold of you, where can people find you?
Well, armedandfeminine.com is my website. We're located in West Central Pennsylvania. We might consider a road tour in the off season, maybe going south. But we've had a lot of requests from different people, friends of mine who live elsewhere, and say, please come down here and do this. So we might go on the road. I'm still weighing the cost benefit analysis of doing such a thing. And of course, you know, through the media, we have a very, very engaging Facebook page, Armed and Feminine LLC, pretty active on Twitter. We actually have several moderators to our pages and things, a little Armed and Feminine team too. And our YouTube channel, of course, which is just Armed and Feminine. And since YouTube hasn't been so friendly to all of us too, so we've moved over to GunStreamer, like have you and many of our other friends, and they're great people. You know, I got to meet them in person at that show this past year. Young whippersnappers that really, you know, have a lot of good energy, that are moving it in the right way. So I really hope it takes off for them too. So.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where Austin and Paul and Ashley, they are gun people. They're also tech minded, but they're not someone who saw this window of opportunity, said, hey, let's go exploit the gun community. Mm-hmm. They're truly about freedom. They're about all amendments, but the Second Amendment is something that they are passionate about. So go check out GunStreamer.com as well. I know that you're on Instagram and all that. So guys, if you're out there and you're interested, she also does some work for doing reviews, which you said you don't do a lot, but when you do, you actually do some stuff for gearreport.com. So if you like the written word and you still like the written reviews, Kellyanne and I both are doing stuff over on gearreport.com. So yeah.
And unfortunately, that's the one that I don't get to spend the most time on, and that I hope to, especially in the off season. And I have all of these great things written in my brain, and I have notes. It's just taking the time to get them down there. Yeah, lots of. I've written different articles. I've written for USCCA too. I've gotten in their women's edition. I've had some key articles for April 17 and 18 that I thought were really nice. So when they asked me to be a contributor, I really try to, you know, do a good job and get something that's people really want to read. And I did write for Concealed Nation for a little while too. So like I said, that's just a lot of not front sight focus when you have a lot of that going on. So
I do love that analogy. I'm going to steal that. I'm actually going to use that. I love the front sight focus analogy to multitasking. I think that is wonderful. Yeah. I never actually heard anyone put it quite that way, but that makes absolute sense to me. I'll credit you when I do use it. Well, guys, thank you so much. If you have any questions for myself or Kellyanne, please use the comment section below. And if it is for Kellyanne, I'll make sure I get those questions to her and all of that. Maybe we can get those answered. But Kellyanne, thank you so much for coming in for the podcast. I really do appreciate it. And hopefully we'll see you, at SHOT Show at least. But keep doing what you're doing. And I know that you are an inspiration and someone that I think that women in our community can and should look up to. So thank you so much for joining us.
The pleasure was mine. Thanks, man.
Guys, once again, thank you so much for listening to the Armed Citizen Podcast. We'll see you next week. Semper Fi. Thanks for listening to the Armed Citizen Podcast. To check out our full lineup of pro-gun media content, including our product reviews, live shows, and other Second Amendment activity, please check out our website, www.ghosttacticalproductions.com.